This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are live. We are live here. Welcome, welcome to my early visitors here on Instagram and also here on Pet Life Radio. You're here live with Dr. Jeff. Next for 30 minutes here for you, for your pets. Ask me anything. AMAs, I love that. And how am I? I'm doing great. For those of you on Instagram, just go ahead and ask away for Pet Life Radio, 877-385-8882. Once again, 877-385-8882. And so Wonder Dog Rescue is here. My Life with Corgi is here. I love this. My sister Beth is here. Bethany, I should say. And so before we get too into this, and I hope you have some good questions. There were a couple of questions I had last week that I didn't get to. And I want to make sure. One was cauliflower ear. And I hope the person who asked it is here. If not, we'll do it again. But in fact, maybe I should give some time for some of you to join on. And then we've got three things. One was inappropriate urination in cats. Okay. Two was the cauliflower ear and a chihuahua that seems to cough every time it drinks water. And so I have answers for all of those, which is so great. My Yorkie will not be just in. Okay. So for one thing, it's a great question. Pet care, how you doing? So here's the thing. Dogs, when you're brushing their teeth, first of all, the best time to do it, it's a little too late for most of you because it's when they're very young. But anything beyond that, what I notice is that when you're going at them with a toothbrush, the finger butt, whatever it is, that's when they object. So I've demoed this before, and I'll do it again. I'll have to get one of my dogs to do it. Maybe we'll do it next week. But what I do is I like getting behind the dog. So put them on your lap, put them on a table, whatever, and you are behind them. The first thing, when you're behind them, it's pretty hard for them to back up, isn't it? Because they're going up against you. They can't back up. So that's perfect. And then what I start is your finger and just the paste. You get an enzymatic doggy toothpaste. It's non-sudsing. It's swallowable. They can't spit it out. So you got to give them something they can swallow. And then what you do is you just go right behind them. So you're behind them now, coming up, and you just start rubbing. Just rubbing a little bit. And with the paste, the toothpaste is flavored. They usually like it. And they'll let you do it. And literally 10 seconds. And then you go, oh my God, you did a good boy, you did a good girl, and give them their favorite treat. And then immediately let them jump, let them, maybe you do it just before a meal, just before a walk. So what's going to happen is you're going to set the tone that when you go at them with just your finger and the toothpaste, and you let them rub for 10 seconds and then 15 and then 30, you keep building it up. Then what's going to happen is, and always associated with a treat, they're going to go, that's not so bad after all. And they'll let you do it. Once you get to a point where you can go like 45 seconds to 60 seconds and you're going up, down, around, remember, you're going from behind. You're at their back. They can't back up because you're already stopping them from backing up. And you're talking to them. And as you're doing it, you say, my God, you're so good. You're so good. And they start really enjoying it. They enjoy the process. And more importantly, they make the association that every time mom or dad's going after me with this thing, I'm going to get my treat. I mean, life is good. So once you get to that point, you want to get these little finger brushes. Now, about the finger brushes, real quick. They're all like a silicone rubber sleeve. The original ones, the bristles, if you can call them that, all they were like little bristles. They were rubber, the same material, very short. They're not going to work. However, now you can get the same silicone rubber sleeve with real toothbrush bristles. That is effective. Most of the times, I never even use a toothbrush. I mean, sometimes if you've started young and your dog's used to it, you can do it that way too. But I find they object. They want to go backwards. They want to run away. And so if you use from behind and you're petting them as you're doing it, and they don't even realize in a sense that they're getting their teeth brushed, and they get a treat, and then they get to eat or go for a walk. It's all positive. So that is my recommendation. Try that. Hey, JB. So what I wanted to do, let's talk about the chihuahua that coughs when it drinks water. First of all, what we see in many, many small breeds, and I obviously a chihuahua can qualify, is they oftentimes have a collapsing trachea. It's either a redundant dorsal tracheal membrane, which basically minimizes it. It decreases the opening, the lumen, the inside of the trachea, and it causes more coughing. So that's one thing. We just know that by breed. When we have a collapsing trachea, it's usually smaller breeds. Now, So what happens is sometimes when their necks are down, they're drinking water, that will stimulate that the irritation coming down and they start coughing. Another thing you have to know that when dogs cough, coughing dogs, it's not always trachea. Believe it or not, it can be secondary to heart. And again, if I look at dogs, breeds that oftentimes have heart disease, heart murmurs, enlarged hearts, etc., again, it's often the smaller breeds. So what you need to do is when you have a coughing dog, period, any kind of coughing dog, what could it be? It could be a little infectious trachea bronchitis, i.e. kennel cough, which of course, depending on where you live and lifestyle, I don't call it kennel cough. I don't like that name because people say, I never take my dog to a kennel. Ah, but you go to the dog park and you go to the 3rd Street Promenade and you go to the Grove and you go to Rodeo Drive and you go to Beverly Drive and you take your dog to the groomer, you take your dog to the vet. It is live in LA cough. So it's really something that every dog has exposure to. And therefore, I do recommend talk to your veterinarian. I like the Bordetella shot. And even sometimes now, depending on lifestyle, the influenza shot. But the key is it could be infectious trachea bronchitis. Absolutely. If you have a young dog that has, you know, good heart, good trachea, and it was, you know, has a history of going to the dog park every day, it's probably that. So you treat that accordingly. Treat that first before you start diving in to more fancy testing. Now, if you take an x-ray and the heart is large or you hear a murmur, then it might be time, depending on the condition of the heart, the age, et cetera, how severe it is, how severe the murmur is. Are there other signs of exercise intolerance or something that might indicate a heart problem? Then you want to go ahead and see a veterinarian for at least an x-ray. And one of the things, by the way, that, you know, when we talk about heart disease and diagnostics for heart disease, what was the gold standard years and years ago, which was an ECG, electrocardiogram, and x-ray. Now, I wouldn't say those are passé. They're still 100% necessary, but it seems like the test that is the most efficient and accurate, especially when it comes to deciding what medications to use, is going to be an echocardiogram. So that is basically an ultrasound of the heart, and it measures everything. What's beautiful about it is on an x-ray, you can see the size of a heart, but you just see the outside. You don't see what of that size, how much of it is wall, how much of it is actual chamber size, how thick or thin is the wall. You can't see valves. So you hear the murmur, but you can't see how the valves are working. You can't measure pressures. So, and all the ECG or EKG does is give you the electrical activity of the heart. So you need an echo. An echo is the best way to diagnose heart disease. Not only that, but to determine what is the best treatment for the apparent heart disease, if there is one. And that's why I'd recommend either your veterinarian, if they do it, I prefer myself because it's so specialized to refer it to a board certified veterinary cardiologist. There are some GPs that are really good with echoes. I do abdominal ultrasounds, but I don't like doing echoes. And, you know, it's sort of, you know, I know what I know, but more importantly, I say this all the time. It's very important to know what you know. It's more important to know what you don't know, because when you don't know what you don't know, i.e. you think you know, that's what gets you into trouble. So I'm very comfortable. I know my limitations. If I'm going to have a heart, I always look at it this way. If it was my own pet, what would I do? Would I make a diagnosis myself on a heart problem? Heck no. Now I'm referring it to the cardiologist. So it's the same thing. I think get a good echocardiogram, especially if it's a chronic problem in an older dog and it's getting worse and there's exercise intolerance and there's coughing, whatever, breathing issues, get the x-rays, of course, and then echocardiogram. I need to make my 15-pound pom mix poop. He's on 3 mils of gabapentin. He's already on Provible Forte capsules. Yes, try just adding some fiber to the diet, whether it's canned pumpkin, cooked oatmeal, cooked sweet potato, psyllium powder. Sometimes adding fiber will kind of help things go through. And again, some dogs poop once a day. Some dogs 4 times a day. It all depends on how much they're eating, how they're handling the food, etc. So it may not be a necessarily bad thing, but if they're not pooping at least once a day, I think I would definitely do something. Try some of those things and see if that works. All right, let's see. The cat who is peeing on furniture, etc. One thing about cats, and I love them. I have 3 of my own. I had five, actually. 2 of them are gone, both age-related. They were great. And I have not yet replaced them, but I'm sure I will. But anyway, I always say this. I would rather tackle the most difficult cat medical or surgical problem than I would a cat behavior problem. They are really tough when it comes to their behavioral nuances. Now, if I have a cat that's suddenly peeing on furniture, He's trying to tell you something. He's unhappy about something. Something's changed. Cats are very sensitive to change. And it could be as remote, as weird as moving the litter box from one part of a room to another, changing the litter, changing the time. How often do you clean the litter box? How many other cats? Is a cat sitting at a perch at a window and there's another cat or something outside that is frustrating him? It could be, what time you come home from work? Did you change what time you come home from work? Did you change what time you feed? So, I mean, these are all little things that will really freak a cat out. And when cats get, pardon, pissed off at you, they show it by peeing in inappropriate places. Now, of course, yes, you need to check their urine. You may need to check out their kidneys. Are they drinking more water than normally? Yes. But a lot of times it's purely behavioral. Something in their world has changed. Minute, it can be. And now this is how they're letting you know, I'm not happy about that. I want it the way it was. I want that box where it was. Don't change the litter without talking to me first. Don't give me new food, et cetera. That's what they're telling you. So you want to, of course, you need to rule out the medical issues, UTI, urinary tract infection, kidney disease, maybe your diabetes, drinking more water. So there are other things that it could be, but understand it could be behavioral. So when this is happening frequently, first thing I do is recommend getting a thorough physical exam, check these things out. And if that's what's going on, then you need to try. And I underline, try to figure out what it is. And guess what? It's probably not going to be easy. So this is very common in cats. And lastly, we talked about, let me see if there are any other questions that came up while I'm ranting. Now let's talk about cauliflower here. So there are two kinds, if you will. Oh, hold on. How can you tell if cats are being aggressive or playful with dogs? We have small foster in the house. My roommate's cat will hide and sneak attack them. That is probably being pissed off. More not angry, I should say. Because if they may not peep, but they may. You bring enough other dogs in the house, you may see, again, accidents around the house. Cats are tough. I mean, they'll let you know what they like, who they like, and also very, very quickly let you know who they don't like. For example, I'm sure many of you experienced this in multiple cat households. Bring one of your cats to the vet. Just one. Now, we're talking cats that eat together. They sleep together. They groom each other. Bring one to the vet. See what happens when you bring that one home. You get that one out of the carrier, and boy, they are attacking. The house cat, the one that did not go to the vet, is like hissing. He's swatting at. He's like, who the heck are you? What do you mean, who am I? I'm your brother. I'm here all the time. They treat it like a different, strange animal. It's the smells. It's maybe the jealousy that this guy got a chance to go out. You can't ask them what it is, but it happens a lot. So bringing all these dogs in, it could be aggressive. Could be playful, but most likely, if it's a new dog, a foster that's new to the environment, that is infringing upon your cat's territory, it's probably aggressive. He's probably saying, buddy, I don't want you here. So you might have to calm the cat down, separate them for a little while, and see if that helps. Anyway, cauliflower ear. We have to break. We have to break here. It is way 3 minutes past my break time. So we're going to go away for just a minute or two. Have Mark run our commercial for Pet Life Radio, and I'll be right back. Go ahead, Mark, take it away.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem, but the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell. She was very alert. She was going on 5-mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's CARNIVORA.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets. Let's talk pets. On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome, welcome. We're back here on Pet Life Radio talking about a case I had. So I have a little Frenchie, got into something on a walk, and liver values were elevated. Dog's doing great for the last week and a half. We rechecked the values to make, hopefully everything is coming down, and it went up. It's higher. So one of the things that the doc said, and by the way, is Dr. Trivedi, a friend, and he said that if it was within a week and what it was, it still probably could be going up from your initial insult. He says, since the dog is acting normally, eating normally, everything else about him is doing fine, just wait it out, give it another 2 weeks, and then recheck the values. So if they're still high at that time, then we're going to probably have to delve a little bit deeper, maybe do a liver biopsy, find out what's going on. But it's a little abnormal. And it's a young dog. It's 15 months old. So, all right. Cats, yes, they are from another world. All right. So cauliflower ear. So first of all, it's a great question because we see it a lot. Now, there are two kinds of cauliflower ear. Now, there is the one where dogs have something called a hematoma. A hematoma is a blood blister in the ear flap called a pinna, and usually from an injury, excessive aggressive scratching, shaking head, that ear flopping back and forth and hits the edge of a table, pops the blood vessel inside the ear flap, fills up with blood. Now what? So dog comes in with this huge, large ear flossy, ear soft, mushy kind of inflammation. You can tell there's fluid in there. It feels different than anything else. So fluidy, what we do is, I will tell you this. First of all, 95 plus, now I would even say 99% surgical. But I'm conservative. I always try to drain it first. So drain it. Sometimes I'll infuse a little steroid in it. And sometimes some people have done a little epinephrine, which closes up some vessels. You can't find the bleeder or bleeders. There may be more than one. So what you do is you eliminate the dead space. So first, let's get rid of the blood out and see what happens. 99% of the time, it's back within days. I had my most recent one, and I used the same thing. I said, my friend Dean, I said, Dean, you are a lucky son of a you-know-what, because it worked. It's not back. And it never came back. So you're the 1%, buddy. Be thankful, but normally it's going to come back. So ultimately, it's a surgery. There are many different surgeries that have been done over the years. One is putting a cannula in, finally drains, they'll finally clot, but the blood is drinking out. I've tried that one. It doesn't work for me. Maybe it worked for the dogs or not. You have to do what you're good at. I do the surgery. I make a slice the length of the hematoma. I then do what they call mattress through and through sutures. We eliminate the dead space. So instead of like this, if you sew the back end to the front end together and make it so tight that there's no place for the blood to go, finally it's going to clot. And then you go ahead and remove the sutures and everybody's happy. Now, I will tell you, if you have a dog with erect ears, all right, sometimes after the surgery, one of the ears will flop a little bit. Nothing you can do about it. It makes them look cute. So what is the problem if you leave it alone? That's the cauliflower ear that I'm talking about. And that is the fluid part of the blood finally resorbs. The cells die. It's blood cell, red blood cells die in five days, 7 days, whatever it is. Now, what's left? Fibrin. Fibrin is the meshwork that starts the clot. So now you have this fibrin there, and it is literally basically forming a clot in the entire ear flap called the pinna. And you can't control how, where, why it's going to do that. So I've seen dogs with true wrestler's cauliflower ear. The ear is contorted, it's twisted, it's turned. And I worry about that because if it happens lower down and occludes the opening of the vertical ear canal, then you're going to have persistent infections. So I do not recommend doing nothing. You either continue to drain it, which is silly. You drain it once, like I do, give it a shot, give it that 1%, and then you do the surgery. Now, and when a dog comes in with a cauliflower of the flap, I know exactly what happened. And it had a hematoma and no one did anything about it. Now, sometimes it was a rescue dog, so they had no control because it happened before the dog was rescued. So that's kind of what happened. Now, let's talk about the other thing. It could be, again, I did not see the ear in this question, so I can't tell you. And that is the ear canal itself gets really, really inflamed. Looks like cauliflower. It's exploded. You can barely get a Q-tip down. Ah, that is because of chronic ear disease. It's ear infection. And if left untreated, or even if you do your best to treat it, when it's usually secondary to allergy, it could be chronic infection, either bacterial or fungal, yeast, Malassezia, for example. And the tissue gets so inflamed and so swollen that it occludes the canal. And that, again, could be a big problem. Now, for that, depending on, I mean, it's better obviously to get these early. So steroids, antibiotics, culturing the ear. If you use the right antibiotic based on the ear culture, is there yeast? If then a Malassezia, otitis, then you want to get them on an antifungal medication, some sort of eardrop. But when it gets so bad that the medicine can't even get down to where it needs to, it's very tough. So there are two surgeries. Depending on the severity and the location, you can either do what's called a vertical ear canal ablation, which is what I do. I love doing those. You can also do an LER, a lateral ear resection. I find that's not as effective. If you've done them, I used to do them because before I started doing the vertical ear canal, I was doing LERs, lateral ear resections. On that one, you're just taking away just the skin portion and you're opening it up, okay? And so that way you only have like a little, instead of having an ear canal like this, you only have this, the back part. And then so you can still, you can clean the ear, but it doesn't look as good. I'm not a big fan, but it's if your vet does it and is good at it and it works, then you're good. Now, so next is the TECA, total ear canal ablation. So when do you decide which to do? So this is where sometimes you need an extended, more advanced imaging, like a CT scan. But if I feel the canal and it feel it's like very rock hard, okay, I know it's inflamed, but I think there's still good on a little short horizontal canal leading to the tympanum, the eardrum, I will remove the entire vertical canal. It's really cool because what it does is it takes away the whole canal. You create a new hole about right down here. Because remember, a dog's ear canal comes down and then it goes in. So basically, the little short horizontal canal, you make a new hole from the outside that goes straight into that short horizontal canal. So the part of the canal that usually gets inflamed and infected is the vertical canal. So now there is none. So you still have a flap. It's all covered up with skin. You don't know it's there, but they have a little hole right there. And when you have to clean the ear, whatever, you're just going, it's almost, you're making a dog's ear more like a human ear. Just a short horizontal canal going straight to the eardrum. Now, when that is also affected, you need to do a TECA. And that's a total ear canal ablation. I personally do not do those. You got to cut way deep. You got to cut into the bulla. You got to do a bulla osteotomy, it's called. You're almost talking a little more of a brain thing, not just ear thing. And I'm not comfortable doing them. It's something, you know, it's one of those, if I learned how to do it, I probably could. But at this point in my career, I'm busy enough doing what I do every day. So I refer those out to the surgeon. And again, it goes back to knowing what you know and knowing what you don't know. I wouldn't do it on my own dog. If I'm not doing it on my own dog, I'm not doing it on your dog. So I refer those to a surgeon for a TECA. And interestingly, there are some surgeons I know that won't even do a TECA. You got to really be good at them. You got to do enough to stay sharp. And I don't have enough of those to even stay sharp. So for me, it's not worth it. But anyway, TECA is the answer when the entire canal is affected. If it's just the vertical canal, I can do what's called a vertical ear canal resection. Okay. Any more questions about that? You can reach me anytime. Because obviously you don't really know how bad it is, and you may have to do some imaging. Next up, with lipoma, there are several ads indicates that mushrooms are a remedy. I am not familiar. I'll tell you right now, I can tell you one thing, make sure they're not poisonous mushrooms. I see a lot of dogs eating those mushrooms at, on a dog walk, and there are mushrooms on some lawns. For some reason, it's a lot of lawns, and these dogs can get really sick. I'm sure you've heard stories of people hiking and eating those mushrooms and dying. So for me, I don't know enough about it. If there's a study, if there's a scientific study in a journal that's peer-reviewed that talks about mushrooms as a remedy, please send it to me. If it's just, these naturopaths that are just saying, anything but drugs, then I'm not so sure. Again, I probably wouldn't do it on my own dog, but if there's a scientific data out there, I'd love to see it. So please send it to me. And I don't know where these ads are. If they're on TikTok, I don't know. All right. Dahlia, hello, wave. I'm waving back. Anycon's using protein dental care, water additive, and coenzymes, Dentplaque. Okay, great question. So first of all, don't say she won't let you brush, because if you do it the right way and you do slow and you get to treat every time, you'd be surprised. But anyway, these water additives, these enzymes, here's the thing. There's nothing that I know that's really going to dissolve the tartar. Plaque, maybe. Plaque is the film left over after a meal, and that these enzymes might be able to remove, to get through and dissolve some of that plaque. In my opinion, humble opinion, once it becomes tartar, calculus, once it hardens, which is the plaque which is sitting in the mouth, and the saliva and the bacteria are working on that plaque, and it hardens and becomes calculus, tartar, the only way to get it is physical scraping. And the only way to do that well is typically on a dog or a cat, especially a cat, under anesthesia. Now, if you have the perfect dog, even if you think you're getting it off and you're being, you can remove that tartar from the surface of the tooth and you sit back and say, oh, that's great. I removed it. It looks great. Not so fast, because what's going on under the gums, you can't get to. And my friend Jan Bellows, a phenomenal board-certified veterinary dentist, did the study. And it turns out that the damage over time being done by not removing that calculus from under the gums will ultimately destroy the bone. And then these teeth are going to rot out, literally rot out. So if you wanted to kid yourself, maybe once every 6 months, you want to go in for anesthesia-free, go for it. But at least once a year, depending on the dog, some more often, you're either going to start brushing the dog's teeth and not letting the plaque sit there and build up, become tartar, and invade the gums. That would be the best. Brushing every day. Every other day, that would be second best, but still pretty good. By day three or four, you're going to lose the battle. So that's what you want to do, and try that. But if you're going to do nothing, are these water additives, CET has a good one. I mean, there's some out there. Enzymatic control, yeah, it might work. So give it a shot. Let me know. Which finger brush brand, Sharon? There's no one brand, but there is. If you go online, even Amazon or whatever, you will see a bunch of them. You want to look for the ones. They all have a silicone rubber sleeve, but the bristles are real toothbrush bristles, not the little rubber, you know, bristles that are like this short. If you want to get a real toothbrush bristle, the length, and those are the ones that can do some good. Oh, protein down water. There was another one. Which finger brush? Raw food versus dry kibble versus dehydrated. My thoughts. So for me, what I say doesn't make a difference. It's what your dog likes. So if they like all of them, here's the only thing I would say. When it comes to raw, I would prefer a raw diet that's gone through one of two or both processes. One is high pressure pasteurization. They also call it high pressure processing, HPP. The second, you already mentioned, you want to freeze dry. So if you meant dehydrated, freeze dried, then that's okay. The whole idea is typically with these raw diets, there are four bacteria we're concerned about. E. coli, Listeria, Campylobacter, and Salmonella. If we can get those four, Salmonella, E. coli, Listeria, Campylobacter, then you're probably okay. And we know that freeze drying and HPP will usually destroy those bacteria, in which case I'm okay with raw. Now, does your dog like raw or freeze dried? If they do, then that's great. But the raw has to go through high-pressure pasteurization. And when I had my Optimum out there for a while, unfortunately, we had to stop making it. The company making for us basically dropped us because we weren't selling enough of it. Anyway, it was both. And then what we did was we cultured every batch before it went into bags to make sure that there were none of those big four in the food. I mean, there's some brands out there that do a really good job. And if you know, do your homework, and that's what you should do. But that's what I would recommend. I have no problem with those if they've gone through. All right. So, cleansing, extraction, or anesthesia, 2 years in a row, 16 teeth gone. Now, I have a client that had two palms, and she'd been for many years going just to anesthesia free. And I went in, it was for an annual exam, and I noted a bunch of loose teeth, I should say. And she told me, well, I don't understand. I go into this for dentistry every 6 months. I said, well, where are you going? Because it wasn't me. And she told me it was the groomer or whoever does anesthesia free. I said, that could be your problem. We took x-rays. What Dr. Bellows' study shown, there was so much bone destruction. On two palms, we extracted 12 teeth and one 15 teeth. I actually saved them. They're in a drawer in my office. So when people question, am I just trying to sell dentals? I go, no. Let me show you. And I use those to educate the clients because it's a problem. So yeah. But if it's under anesthesia, and it depends how often you're doing it, because these dogs, if it's a six, let me see, under anesthesia 2 years in a row, it depends how old the dog is. I'm just going to venture a guess, I may be wrong, that it's a small breed, like a Maltese, a Yorkie, a little mini poodle, a Bichon, Chihuahua. They're the ones that seem to have a lot of problems with the teeth, and it's just genetic. They're going to lose their teeth. Do HeartGuard or Bravecto protect dogs against ticks? Well, the Bravecto will do fleas and ticks. HeartGuard, no. So, but Bravecto doesn't do heartworm. I shouldn't say that. I don't think there is a Bravecto out there yet that does like Credelio Plus, like NexGard Plus and Simparica Trio that do flea, tick, and heartworm all in one pill. I know that Bravecto has a new one called Quantum. It's a year-long injection. I am not a fan of it yet. I don't think there's enough data out there. And my fear when you get these long-acting medications, especially with animals who we know isoxazolines might cause if they're not predisposed to seizures, you're not going to get seizures. But dogs that have had seizures or maybe predisposed that we don't know yet, that could actually stimulate a seizure. Do I want to give a shot that's going to be in there for a year? How do you get out? How do you find out that, oh my God, the dog's not doing well with this shot? Now what? So I'm not a fan yet, only because that it could be the best product in the world. I want to see more testing. And I would like to see maybe a dog who you're thinking of it, go on to the one that's either once a month or the 12-week Bravecto orally first, see what kind of reaction, if any. And if you don't get a reaction, then yes, Quantum could be great. I know you can tell I'm pretty conservative with that stuff, guys. Is air dry the same as HPP? I don't think so. I'm not sure. I shouldn't say that. Hey, Steph, I'm not sure. So, okay, Patsy, how you doing? Okay, we started to use mineralizing toothpaste. Some Arirs are any better? I'm not sure. If it's not a canine-flavored toothpaste, it's probably safe. But remember, these human toothpastes are not made to be swallowed. You're spitting it out. I don't know anything about this product. If it's for dogs, then go for it. If it's not specifically a canine paste, dentifrice, I don't know if I would use it. Yeah, only because I feel weird if they swallow it and there's something wrong in the ingredients that should not be swallowed. 9 years, 5 pounds. There you go. Older, small breed. Ding, 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 ding. I've been around the block a few times. But these are the dogs, by the way, that yes, this doesn't surprise me. They have very, very tough teeth. Victoria, how are you? Oh, it is for dogs. Okay, if it's for dogs, then yeah, go for it. Try it. I don't know if it's better or worse. A lot of this stuff is hype. It's marketing hype. So you're going to use it with the other enzymatics. They call it enzymatic toothpaste. This is a mineral. As long as it's for dogs and it can be swallowed, give it a try. Personally, I don't think it makes a difference. I think what makes a difference, as with people, it's not the paste. It's the action. It's the cleaning, rubbing the plaque off the tooth surface, getting rid of it, and getting under the gums as best you can. That's what we're trying to do. You can use water in a toothbrush, but a tasty toothpaste kind of makes it a little better for them. So, all right. Anyway, once again, I talk a lot, as you can tell. And I've overstayed my welcome here at Pet Life Radio. So I hope I got all the questions. Anything else that I didn't get to, please, I hear Werbs_DVM. You can send it to my email at drjeff@petliferadio.com, drjeff@drjeff.com, whatever, and I'll be happy to answer. Sometimes if it's a long question, I know most veterinarians won't do this, but send me a text. When you send me a note on one of those, on my email, send me your phone number. I will call you. And yes, do we need an hour? I think I can even do more than an hour. but we'll get to next week. All right. Speaking of next week, same bat time, same bat channel here. We'll be here. Looking forward to seeing you here on Pet Life Radio and my Instagram Live. But you know, I'm very reachable. Many of you I know are my clients. Love to have you on the show. And if you have friends that want to learn a little bit more about their pets, have questions that their veterinarians aren't answering, send them my way. I love to help people with their pets, and I think it makes lives better for you and certainly makes lives better for your pets. So we'll see you soon. Take care.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.